Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Well, the timing was fraught, and the news sounded pretty bad. With Election Day 2 weeks away, the Obama administration announced insurance premiums for coverage under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, would jump next year by an average of 22%. With that, the White House thrust Obamacare into the hot campaign spotlight and has the country asking again, what's really going on with health care reform? This hour On Point, premiums up and the heat up on Obamacare. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you going to be signing up again when open enrollment starts in 6 days? Is Obamacare working for you, for the country? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's dive right in. Joining me first today from Denver, Colorado is Noam Levy, health policy reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Noam, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
Okay, so the numbers that we heard were 22%, 25%. What is the average and what's it based on? What's going up?
So the way that the Obama administration looks at health insurance premiums on the marketplaces created by Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is they peg it to one of the plans that's offered in each market around the country. And that benchmark plan, as they call it, is going up 25% in the states that have marketplaces operated by the federal government, not to get too complicated right off the bat, but there's another set of states that run their own marketplaces. If you factor those in, the rate of increase in this benchmark plan is slightly less, 22%.
Okay. And you've got a huge range. I mean, this is an average, but people will see things all over the place. You've got things all the way down in the 2, 3, 4% in some states, and in others, in Arizona, doubling. What's it look like? What's the sort
of
array?
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, one of the things that's always important to keep in mind about health care and health insurance is that there isn't really one national system. There are every state, and within a state, there are different health insurers, there are different health insurance markets, and each one is subject to a variety of different forces, Obamacare being actually just one of them. So in some states that have had traditionally more healthy health insurance markets, or where the competition has been more robust, you're going to see probably lower increases. California, for example, remains a fairly competitive place. The rates there were going up in the low double digits, 11, 13, 14%. As you mentioned, some other states even down in the single digits. There are other states where there has been less competition, or you know, the important thing to keep in mind here as well is that a year-over-year increase, of course, is dependent on whether or not the price in the previous year was adequately adjusted for what the costs of healthcare were. And in some parts of the country, health insurers priced their products more aggressively than in others. They're trying to make up some of that ground now, and that's in some cases where you're seeing some of the biggest increases.
So Ohio, New Hampshire, we're looking at just a 2% hike next year. That seems incredible for healthcare. You never hear 2%, but there it is. Indiana, 3%. But I'm looking here in North Carolina, they'll be up by 40%. Arizona, 116%. Now, everybody hastens to say, well, most people won't actually pay this because subsidies will kick in. What portion of people will actually be faced with this in their personal checkbook?
So remember, the marketplaces are a relatively small part of the total health insurance market in the United States. There are about 150 million people who get their health insurance through an employer. There are 100 million plus people who get their health insurance through a government program like Medicare or Medicaid. The number of people on these marketplaces are typically people who couldn't get health insurance through an employer, either because they're not employed or they work for a company that doesn't offer health benefits. There are about 10, 11 million people on these marketplaces around the country. There are a few million more who are buying health insurance directly from health insurers rather than going through healthcare.gov or these markets. Now, within this subset, there are a certain number of people who are getting subsidies. The Affordable Care Act provides federal assistance to low and moderate income consumers up to four times the federal poverty level to offset the cost of these premiums. And historically, that's been about 85% of the people on the marketplaces who have qualified for these subsidies. So again, we're talking about a relatively small number of people who will feel the full brunt of these increases. Of course, if you're one of those people, it doesn't really matter what all those statistics are. You're gonna feel the pinch. It's a few million people. It's a lot of people. But again, the context, I think, is important.
And of course, somebody ends up paying, even for those who are subsidized, the government ends up paying for that. What is fundamentally driving these? I mean, you said some of these insurance companies who are participating may have set previous premiums too low. Okay. But the idea is you get a lot of people in the pool, healthy people and unhealthy people, and altogether it holds rates in some kind of check, certainly not 116% kind of hikes. Where things are being driven by some dynamic that is attendant to the Affordable Care Act itself, what is that dynamic?
So it's important to understand kind of how much health insurance costs everywhere. And I think, oddly enough, though most of us feel like we're paying too much for health care, and arguably we are, those of us who get health insurance through an employer actually probably don't understand how much that's costing. So for example, I'm gonna quote some statistics here which I think are instructive. There was a study done just released last month, actually, by the Urban Institute, which looked at the cost of an average health plan that's provided through an employer compared to the average cost of one of these marketplace plans, these Obamacare marketplace
yep.
plans. And on average, the cost of the plan on the marketplace was actually lower than the cost of an employer plan. So people say, well, how can that be? How can that be? We see these hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month that we're paying, we're being asked to pay for these marketplace plans. Well, remember, most people only pay a small fraction of the cost of the health benefit if they work. Their employer typically picks up about 80% of the cost. So if a health plan that someone gets through an employer costs about $500 a month, they're only paying about $100 a month. Now, the system that was set up through Obamacare through the marketplaces creates this parallel system. Of course, there is no employer subsidy for these people. So the people who make too much to qualify for this federal assistance are subject to the whole cost of health insurance. Now, can you imagine if every employee in America had to pay the full cost of their health insurance plan? We'd be having a much more politically charged conversation than we even are now. What's going on here?
Yeah.
The problem here is that the underlying cost of medical care in the U.S. is astronomical. Anybody who's seen a bill when they go to the hospital knows that the amount that hospitals and physicians and others in the medical system are charging for the services they provide is unbelievable and much, much higher than in other parts of the world. Now, we can have a debate about whether it's worth it. You know, people's health is important, and coming out of the hospital alive is – you can't put a price on that. But it's important to understand that it's those underlying costs of providing health care that are in turn driving how much health insurance costs, which,
of course,
health insurance covers. But
22-25%, Noam, is still high. I mean, even if you look at what employers pay all in, that's still high 1 year. And this is a public program with a lot of private insurance companies, of course, participating. The question here out on the campaign trail, I mean, you've heard, I'm sure, Donald Trump saying everywhere now, Obamacare is blowing up. It's just not – it's not viable. It's not sustainable that the costs are blowing out of control. I think the implication is you're not getting enough healthy people in these pools, and you've got a lot of sick people in these pools, and so up it goes. Do you buy that that representation of what's happening here?
So clearly the marketplaces are not functioning as well as they need to be just to be sustainable. And one of the – among the reasons for that, I think, are in fact that, yes, the mix of people who are in these marketplaces is not ideal. There's a need to get younger, healthier people to offset the cost of the sicker people who've signed up so far. And that that's a process that's undergoing. Presumably, it'll take a few years to see whether or not this shakes out. There's some other forces in play here. They're pretty technical. The marketplaces, when they were set up, included a system of adjusting risk between health insurers so that if health insurers had unexpectedly high costs for their consumers, that they would be reimbursed. Those programs are either coming to an end or being stopped by Congress. That's helping to contribute.
And a bunch of insurers have dropped out, big ones.
That's right, because they've said that the cost of the people who they have in there are higher than they expected.
So if it's not sustainable, Noam, does that mean Donald Trump is right, that it's blowing up?
No, in a word.
Why not?
Well, everybody anticipates that these marketplaces take a while to adjust. If we continue to see 22-25% year-over-year increases in premiums, then yes, of course, they're not sustainable. If, however, this is an adjustment that will be followed in future years by lower rate increases, I think you could argue that it is sustainable. I think everybody believes that there probably needs to be some adjustments made to these marketplaces to bring in more of these younger, healthier people, to make them sustainable for the long term.
Hillary Clinton says fix it, don't repeal it. But some people might want to fix it. Others might simply want to bury it. Where do you see more political momentum now, Noam?
Well, clearly the momentum on the right has always been repeal it, dump it, start over. And that Donald Trump is clearly tapping into that. That's been an article of faith on the Republican side for 6 or 7 years now. I think Hillary Clinton's position is closer to where realistically I think we're probably going to be going, assuming that Secretary Clinton is the next president. The vast majority of folks in the healthcare sector, insurers, hospitals, doctors, consumer advocates, and others believe in fixing it at this point. Part of the problem, of course, has always been there hasn't really been a realistic alternative presented on the other side. And so the feeling is, let's fix what's there.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about big premium increases for Obamacare. We're looking at the Affordable Care Act in the campaign right now. It's hot. And looking at what the horizon looks down the road for health care reform here. You can join us this hour. Have you seen what's coming in terms of your own Obamacare coverage premiums? Whatever it is it still affordable? Will the subsidies cover you? Is Donald Trump right? This is Obamacare blowing up. Is Hillary Clinton right? We need to save what's good and fix the rest. Here was Donald Trump Monday night after the news of the new next year's premiums came out, saying Obamacare, he said, finished.
Americans are going to experience yet another double-digit spike in your premium for Obamacare, and it doesn't work. In some areas, they're paying 60, 70, and 80% more than they were paying last year. It's over for Obamacare.
Donald Trump ready to jump on it in a big way. Hillary Clinton has talked about it on the campaign trail in Pennsylvania earlier this month, repeating her refrain on Obamacare. It's doing too much good to repeal, she always says, helping not just the 20 million who have insurance for the first time, but also Americans, many more, on employer health plans.
With respect to the Affordable Care Act, I've been saying we've got to fix what's broken and keep what works. And that's exactly what we're going to do. This is a really big deal because it affects, about 195 to 200 million Americans. And so people need to really pay attention when Trump says he's going to get rid of it and turn it back to the insurance companies.
170 million, 190 million, that's including people who don't get it directly, but get the benefits, other benefits that it brought. Insurance companies cannot deny you coverage because of pre-existing conditions, no lifetime limits, kids on until they're 26. Lots of people know about those. President Obama last week in Miami-Dade College, said, here he was on the Affordable Care Act.
For all the good that the Affordable Care Act is doing right now, for as big a step forward as it was, it's still just a first step. It's like building a starter home or buying a starter home. It's a lot better than not having a home, but you hope that over time you make some improvements.
We're in the starter home with Obamacare, says the president. Republicans would just tear it down and start again. Hillary Clinton says, no, we've made a lot of progress here. Let's fix it and go forward. Noam Levy is with us, health policy reporter for the Los Angeles Times, with us from Denver, Colorado today. With me in the studio right now is Limor Daphne, professor at the Harvard Business School, looks at competitive interactions among players and providers in healthcare services, former director of health enterprise management, professor of strategy at the Kellogg School at Northwestern. Limor Daphne, thank you very much for being here.
Glad to be here.
Is Obamacare blowing up?
I think it's very tempting to try to come up with a simple word to capture what's happening here, but it was a very complicated problem to try to solve on insurance, and the solution is really complicated, and the explanations for what's happening right now are fairly nuanced.
Is it working?
To a degree, it is working. It is working to provide coverage to a good share of the population that previously didn't have access, mm-hmm. and it is affordable to a very large segment of that population. What's not working are those 1.52 million people who currently are buying plans on the exchanges without subsidies. They're going to see pretty significant increases in premiums.
Depending on the state they're in.
Depending on the state they're in, and depending on whether they keep the same plan.
Is Obamacare sustainable? Noam Levy was just saying, well, maybe not. If it goes right on this track, you'll need some fixes here. Is it sustainable as it stands now?
I believe so, but it all depends on your definition of sustainable. Will anything collapse? Not unless there's some federal legislation that phases it out. The reason being that even if premiums were to climb at a rate that we didn't expect, mm-hmm. right, we would still have the federal subsidies kicking in for the 85% of the population.
And somebody has to pay for those someday.
That's true. And so if the national government made a decision that those subsidies were too excessive, then yes. It could be, knocked down.
But let's put it another way. To be what you'd like to call sustainable, you would get into some kind of balance here where premiums were covering a lot of the cost, where it wasn't running a big deficit every year. Can you see, is that a reasonable goal for Obamacare?
It's a necessary goal for Obamacare that insurers who are offering coverage on the exchanges can mm-hmm. do so with some modest profit margin. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. And one of the reasons for the recent increases is that some of the protections that were in place that were making it cheaper for insurers to offer plans are being phased out. So they're now raising premiums to cover the loss of some of that effective subsidy that was in place for insurers.
Noam, in other words, they were having their tail covered by the government for a while here, and some of that risk coverage for the insurers is being phased out. Was that a political move on Capitol Hill? Was that Republicans leaving them naked, or was that all baked in the cake from the beginning?
Well, the expectation had been that some of these protections would be phased out. There was some intervention by Congress that cut off some of this protection, and that's exacerbated some of the problems that we've been talking about for sure.
Can we get Limor to a place where we don't have to either subsidize the insured or the insurance companies enormously or unreasonably to make this work?
Eventually. I think it's unrealistic to imagine that creating this market to insure a population that is pretty costly and low income is not going to cost money. It's going to cost money. It's going to cost money through the federal subsidies and also through certain programs that the government is going to administer to help insurers correct for the differences in the kinds of patients that they're attracting. This is what's called risk adjustment. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have to help the market along so that it functions the way that we need it to function. But do I think we'll be seeing increases like this in future years? I don't think so. And if we do, I think that's a pretty concerning sign.
Noam, does this depend on cooperation from the states and governments at the state level for this to work out over time? Many of those have been Republican majorities, state legislatures or state houses, governors' mansions that have not really been into, going with the flow on Obamacare.
Absolutely. I mean, the law, when it was passed, was premised on the assumption, which is since proven wrong, that states would be active partners in developing these marketplaces and helping them function. So among the things that the law envisioned was that states would help enroll people. Getting people enrolled in these plans is not easy. A lot of the consumers who have been uninsured don't know about health insurance, don't know about the subsidies that are available. A lot of those people may be younger and healthier. It was presumed that states would expand their Medicaid programs for very low-income people. That was a critical move to move certain groups of people into government plans and keep them out of the marketplaces. Well, some of the biggest instability that we've seen in marketplaces around the country are in these states that most actively work to undermine the law. And so you have this situation. It reminds me a little bit of my 4-year-old kids who, if I tell them not to dump their Cheerios in the playroom, yeah, and they dump their Cheerios in the playroom and they complain about a mess. And you have a little bit of that dynamic, I think, going on.
Lemoore, blowing up or being undermined or neither?
You know, undoubtedly, the states have played a big role in this. And let me explain how that could work. In states that are opposed to the Affordable Care Act, opposed to Obamacare, mm-hmm, they've not made any outreach efforts to get more enrollees into the exchanges. What does that mean? Well, then you don't attract the healthy population. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys for whom you have to market. The sick, they come because they need the care. But in order for this to work, you actually need to attract those healthy lives, make the case to them for why they need health insurance. And those states are actively undermining the success of these marketplaces.
Why aren't the young in there? We all know about the individual mandate. You've got to do this or pay a penalty. Why isn't the penalty driving younger, healthier Americans into the Affordable Care Act coverage?
Two reasons. The penalty, even though it's hitting $700 per person per year, is still less than premium contributions are for many of the younger.
So people just say they pay $700 and go without health insurance.
That's right.
Wow. You never know what's going to happen.
When you're young, you're invincible.
Brian Blaze joins us in just a moment. A few callers here first. Wes in Nashville, Tennessee. Wes, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that that Obamacare has been a game-changing, you know, financial saving big time for my parents who are in their early 60s, self-employed, always had to purchase their own health insurance. And they went from, on the open market, were paying over $1,000 a month for health insurance, have now are in, you know, $300 or maybe less. So the premiums could double or even triple, and it would still be a significant savings for them. So it's been a huge help for them. And I would like to add, I think those who think that or like to, you know, malign Obamacare really have no idea what it's like purchasing health insurance on the open market. It's a jungle out there.
Yeah, I know that's tough. Let us hold that. There's a story of support for the Affordable Care Act. Let me get one more. Thank you, Wes. In Detroit, Karen is calling. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a City Detroit pensioner, and they took away our medical, and I don't qualify for any of the subsidies, and I went through the exchange, and I'm paying $433 a month with a $5,000 deductible. I can't afford to go to the doctor, so I'm having to try to find extra work just to cover this extra expense, and I'm 62.
So you have Obamacare coverage, Karen, but you're afraid to use it because of the high deductible?
I can't afford. I pay the premium, I can't afford the co-pays when I go to the doctor.
Karen, we've got it. Speak to that, Lemoore. What do you say to Karen's story? What about Wes?
All right. Well, to Karen's story, I would say, first of all, I completely sympathize with the stress that medical expenses are causing you, and would say that that's a serious problem that we continue to need to contend with, and that those who are under 250% of the federal poverty line have assistance available to them for deductibles and for co-payments. Above it, though, I understand it's an incredible burden, and there's no denying that. And with regard to what Wes is saying, that's one of the ways in which Obamacare really has been successful, is making insurance accessible and affordable to those who previously were largely uninsurable.
I want to turn right now, if I may. No, oh, yes, please, Noam.
I was just going to add something really quickly. You know, one of the interesting proposals that's out there, and this is something that's been pursued in California and elsewhere to deal with this deductible problem.
Yeah.
has been to exempt certain visits to the doctor in these health plans from a deductible. So if you have a very high deductible, instead of paying full freight if you go to the doctor with a sore throat or for something that's short of a very serious mm-hmm. medical issue, mm-hmm. that you just have to pay a copay. And the idea is there that that makes a health plan like the one your caller was just talking about perhaps more appealing, particularly for younger people who may say, why am I getting health insurance if I have to pay $5,000 before I can get any benefit whatsoever?
But that's state by state.
At this point, it's just in a few states, but the federal government has indicated that it wants to go in that direction as well.
So maybe there's another piece of a fix there if that's the way this goes. We're talking about healthcare reform, the Affordable Care Act, where it actually stands right now with the big premium increases that have been announced. Lamour Noam, please stand by. Brian Blaze joins us right now from Washington. He's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, former healthcare policy analyst for the Senate Republican Policy Committee. Brian Blaze, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
What do you see happening here? You've got a Republican background in looking at healthcare. Is Donald Trump right that this is blowing up? Is Hillary Clinton right that this is needs to be saved and needs to be fixed?
I think there's a strong case to be made that the costs of the law are blowing up. I mean, I don't think it's a problem of marketing. The ACA made insurance a very bad deal for relatively young and healthy people. It contained lots of insurance mandates that raised the cost of coverage, and it also contained pricing restrictions. So one of your previous callers called in and said that, you know, for his 60-year-old parents, the ACA is a relatively good deal. Well, one of the reasons for that is because insurers can no longer charge age-appropriate premiums. So on average, someone in their early 60s spends about six times more on health care than a young adult. But the ACA restricted insurers' ability to give younger adults discounts for the fact that they spend much less on health care. So that significantly raised their premiums. I think also you have a major perverse incentive created by the law that people have been taking advantage of. So the law, by requiring insurers to offer coverage to any applicant and not varying premiums based on the health status of that applicant, creates an incentive for people to wait until they're sick to purchase coverage. And we've seen people do this in large numbers, wait until they need medical expenses, then run up huge medical bills. And that has contributed to the destabilization of the individual market.
So we're wrestling with this, but is the you know, knock it down or fix it argument about economics fundamentally, Brian, or is it about politics?
I mean, I think it's probably about both. The law passed, as you know, without a single vote from any Republican in Congress. So it's clearly been a divisive issue on a political basis. But also the economics of the law, I think, reveal a lot of bad assumptions. So the projection was that the individual mandate would compel enough young and healthy people into the market so insurers could offset losses that they were incurring on older and less healthy people. And we've seen that the coverage is such a bad deal for young and healthy people that they aren't buying the coverage. And you have risk pools that disproportionately consist of very expensive people who are incredibly costly to cover. And even though some of these back-end subsidy programs, like the reinsurance program, has been much more generous to insurers than they anticipated on a per-enrollee basis, they haven't been able to create a sustainable product. And we've seen many of them withdraw from state exchanges.
Can we escape from that dynamic, Lamour, if you agree that's what's going on here with the young?
Well, let me jump in, first of all, and say that any insurance market is going to require more from the young and healthy than from the aged and sick. It is absolutely a redistribution, and we'd be in denial.
That's the way it works. But still, you have to find a balance that gets everybody in the pool.
You have to get as many of the healthy into the pool as possible. You want to track them. You'd like to, through plan design, offer them something as Noam was suggesting, through certain simplified plans that give them some benefits before they hit the deductible. I would challenge what Brian just mentioned about how insurers haven't been able to come up with sustainable products in spite of some of the protections. It's actually the phasing out of that program he just referenced, reinsurance, that is causing a lot of the spikes.
But that was planned. That was part of the plan.
It was part of the plan. And so it was part of the plan to see a spike in premiums, and we have.
Thank you.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking about the big premium increases that we've heard about this week for Obamacare, looking at the Affordable Care Act in the campaign right now and down the road. What do you see going on here? Are you in the repeal and replace camp? And if so, with what? Is that realistic? Is that possible? Are you in the repair it and roll on camp? How should, would that work? Of course, it's been a big deal on the campaign trail, and some critical comments coming from unexpected corners. Here's Bill Clinton earlier this month at a rally in Flint, Michigan, saying it's done a lot of good, but there are problems, said small business people, individuals who make just a little too much to have to buy insurance on the exchanges, don't get any subsidies. Crazy, he said.
You've got this crazy system where all of a sudden 25 million more people have health care, and then the people are out there busting it sometimes 60 hours a week, wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. It's the craziest thing in the world.
I don't know if that's Bill Clinton, the policy guy there, or Bill Clinton, the politician, but everybody paid attention to that. Donald Trump, of course, happy to say this is all going down. It's going to have to go down. He was at an event at his own resort in Doral, Florida, said health law hurts his own employees, apparently referring to high premiums on public insurance exchanges. But then the resort's property manager took the stage and had to correct his boss. He said about 99% of the staff there are actually insured through the resort, not the ACA. But here was Trump.
We're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. And I can say all of my employees are having a tremendous problem with Obamacare.
Well, not so. His resort manager came out and said, but, you know, there are issues and everybody knows it. Noam Levy is with us from the Los Angeles Times. Brian Blaze from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Limor Daphne is here from the Harvard Business School. Limor, when Bill Clinton says craziest, it's the crazy system, do you know what he's talking about as a policy analyst?
Sure. I mean, he's expressing the frustration of many Americans who are paying high premiums and getting less coverage than they got before. I think Obama phrased it politically more tactfully. He called the Affordable Care Act a starter home in that clip that you aired earlier. But he's saying, hey, this is a giant problem and we are not done fixing it.
So, Noam, if there were a fix under Hillary Clinton, what would a fix look like? Does she lay out the fixes that she would bring?
Well, among them is providing some additional assistance for those group of people who are not qualifying for the subsidies right now. Now that we talked about, these people who are bearing the full brunt of these higher premiums. She's talked about some other things about adjusting the markets and making the health plans more appealing to younger people that we talked about earlier. And, of course, the big thing that she's proposed has been to create a new public insurance program to provide additional options on these marketplaces, the so-called public option that died during the healthcare debate, which she has said would be particularly helpful in those parts of the country where people don't have a lot of choices and therefore are stuck with potentially very expensive options.
Meaning you would not be buying it through the exchange from a private insurer but rather insurance directly from the government?
Something like that, presumably.
Is that a step toward universal coverage or nothing like it?
Well, I mean, I think we're taking a step towards universal coverage with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, is it a step towards single-payer coverage? No, I don't think so, although there has long been a concern, particularly on the right, that that's a nose under the tent, so to speak, another government health plan that would compete with private insurers. Of course, there's there's a little bit of an irony here in the sense that there was no public option in the Affordable Care Act marketplaces, in part because there was an argument made that the private market could do it by itself. The private market is having some difficulty doing that. So that has ironically, I think, rejuvenated some of the calls on the left for more government intervention.
Brian Blaze, what about on the GOP side? If it's repeal and replace, I mean, they voted how many times? 60 times to repeal. Over the summer, they came out talking about something that might replace it. I don't know what you thought of those comments, talking about saving accounts and tax credits for buying insurance. Donald Trump says he's got a great plan. Do the Republican alternatives, does the Trump alternative really exist? Can you imagine it? Could it be brought? Could we repeal and replace with what?
Well, let me start by talking about the growing costs. So about two-thirds of people that have gained coverage because of Obamacare have gained coverage through states that have expanded Medicaid. And one of the growing problems, and this is in a government report released in July, mm-hmm. is that the per enrollee cost of the Medicaid expansion is nearly 50% above what government expected. So you have growing costs with the Medicaid expansion. You have growing costs because of the much higher than expected premiums along with the high deductibles. So I think reform policy should focus on what we can do to lower those costs. So reducing unnecessary benefit mandates, reducing sort of pricing restrictions that inflate the price of coverage for young and relatively healthy people, and allowing more competition into state marketplaces. I mean, one of the things we haven't talked about yet is that the number of choices available to individuals purchasing through the exchange has been cut in half over the past 2 years.
You mean the major insurers
like United,
yeah.
mm-hmm. United, Aetna, mm-hmm. and Humana withdrawing, and 17 of the 23 healthcare co-ops started with government funding through the ACA collapsing because of such massive losses.
So I'm still not sure I heard the Republican alternative. If it's repeal and replace, what would the replace look like?
Well, I think centrally it's taking a lot of the power that Washington centralized through the Affordable Care Act and returning it to states. So allowing states to regulate their marketplaces again. And I think reforming the subsidy structure in Obamacare. So Obamacare contains two subsidies. One is a tax credit that reduces people's premiums, and a second is a subsidy to reduce people's deductibles. And we're only really seeing people below 200% of the poverty line, which is about $24,000, signing up for coverage in anywhere near the numbers that were expected. And I think for people above that line, the assistance is not nearly enough given how much Obamacare raised the underlying price of insurance.
But if you repeal, are we back to throwing this 20 million people out of having insurance again? And what about all the others who may have employer-related insurance but who have benefits here because, you know, pre-existing conditions, you can't be blocked, lifetime caps can't be had. What about all those upsides?
So I definitely, from a political perspective, Republicans, there's going to need to be a replacement package. I don't think they could just repeal. And there are portions of what you mentioned, like the age 26 mandate, which are popular, even though, you know, you have to, from an economics perspective, every benefit carries costs. And what you need to do is really think what actors in the system are best to compare the benefits and costs? And is it the federal government or is it more people working with their employers maybe in terms of employer-sponsored insurance or is it state governments?
I see you wrinkling your brow at that, Limor.
Well, I don't hear a plan here. I think the vast majority of Americans recognize that many of the insurance market reforms that were put in place by the Affordable Care Act are here to stay and ought to be here to stay. So the question, in my view, and I expect that Mr. Blaze might agree with it, is what changes can we make to increase competition and to make it work better? I would go back also to the example that Noam Levy gave of his twins dumping Cheerios and then complaining that it's messy because, let's face it, the Republicans are partly to blame for these markets not working as well as they might otherwise have done, because in states that didn't do the Medicaid expansion, didn't market to healthy enrollees, those are the states that are experiencing the biggest issues with their risk markets. Because Senator Rubio had an amendment passed that required this risk corridor program that was like bumpers on the losses that insurers could experience, required that to be budget neutral, and insurers only got less than 13 cents on the dollar for their losses. They were expecting more. So no, it's not working as well as it might have worked, but in fact, the framers couldn't execute on their plan.
So can I make 2 points about that?
Yes, Brian.
We've seen states like Minnesota, Illinois, Arizona, states that have expanded Medicaid. Tom, you mentioned Arizona has the highest premium increases in the country. Mm-hmm. Minnesota, the Democratic governor, long supporter of the ACA, has said that the law is unaffordable for people in his state. So it is not true that states that have been more opposed to Obamacare, they're the only states that are suffering. There is suffering across the board, regardless of actions that states have taken. On risk corridors, the risk corridor program—
That is limiting losses for the insurance companies engaged with this.
Right. The administration initially indicated it would implement it in a budget-neutral way, which meant that insurers could only be paid out of excess profits that some insurers had made. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, insurers incurred significant losses. And in order to make up the deficit, which was $2.5 billion in 2014 and probably $5 billion in 2015, it would have been necessary to tap taxpayer money. And Congress was opposed to using taxpayer money to bail out insurers that made losses selling through the exchanges. I think that's a very reasonable position for them to have taken.
Yep. Noam, there's a lot of talk here. Do you see in the real political nitty-gritty, do you see Republicans prepared to repeal this and then have to have this in their own hands? If that kicks 20 million people off of insurance rolls and has other knock-on effects, do they want that on their own hook? Are they ready to do it?
In a word, no. I mean, I don't know what Donald Trump wants, but I think congressional Republicans, many of them, recognize that repealing it and replacing this is a huge bite that they've at least so far shown an inability to really get their hands around. I want to just add one other point on this, though, on the cost issue. What we're seeing in Medicaid and in these marketplace plans is driven by a single fact, and that is that people are getting more medical care, and that's expensive. So the reason Medicaid is more expensive than it had been projected to be was because it turned out people were sicker than people expected, and they came in and they needed more medical care. So one way to address that, of course, is to make it more difficult for people to get that medical care. That was the system we had before.
Yep.
And that was particularly, back to the marketplace discussion, the way that health insurers operated in this market beforehand. Health insurers could just not sell a plan to somebody who was sick.
Goodbye.
So I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind here when we talk about sort of how we can make this sustainable and also create a market that can work going forward. Yes, it's important to make the adjustments that we're talking about. But what's driving this is less some of the very specific market dynamics than it is the fact that there's a huge demand for healthcare out there, it turns out, and that underlying medical care is expensive.
We're talking about the premium increases for Obamacare and where the whole health reform is headed. The more, Daphne, I've heard in the last few days, Americans moaning and looking at some of these increases and saying, wow, why can't I be in some other country where this is covered better? I mean, are there look abroad. Is there some reason that we can't give the kind – do we or could we give the kind of coverage to our citizens that they could get if they lived in Europe, let's say? Is there something they've got we don't?
Oh, absolutely. They have a lot of price controls and regulations in place. So,
Still have good coverage?
They do. They have very broad coverage.
Even with price controls? I mean, here you say put on price controls and nobody will want to service you.
What they do have is queues. So queues for
elective.
You have
to line up and wait.
Exactly. Exactly. But by international comparisons, the U.S., notwithstanding what we believe or what we hope is true, that the very best care is available here, we rate more poorly than do other countries, and we spend twice as much as the average other developed country per capita on health care.
Will Obamacare take us to some promised land where we have lower costs and better outcomes?
Obamacare has taken us to a land where our costs are lower than they were projected to be had Obamacare not been passed. And more people are covered. So I would call that progress. Can Obamacare, as it currently is framed, quote, fix this issue of our spending twice as much as other countries and getting to some degree less? No.
Ray in Milwaukee. Ray, you're on the air.
I'm a union worker, and we've seen through our union, we've seen our insurance rates go up between 30 and 50% the last 3 years. It's going to go up again this year. I hope Hillary hears this. This is the reason I voted Democrat the last 5 elections. I will never vote Democrat again because of this law.
But do you think the laws – I mean, you're union, so you've got your own coverage going on there. What's the law have to do with the rate of increase Ray. Ray's gone. Pick it up.
If I could say, I think one of the main problems with our healthcare system is that we're spending other people's money. So 90% of what we spend in healthcare comes through third-party payment. And one of the issues with the Medicaid expansion, for instance, is that Washington is providing a 100% reimbursement of state spending on the expansion population. And what we've seen states do is set very high payment rates to insurers that are managing the care for that population. It may be that recipients are using more healthcare services. I haven't seen the data that Medicaid expansion enrollees are receiving more healthcare services or that the quality of care for them has improved. That's certainly something that we want to measure. But Obamacare's one of its fundamental problems is that its incentives are to sort of double down on the third-party payment system, which has been shown to drive up costs and which just basic economics says increases costs.
On the other hand, Noam, if I'm put out with my own health care savings account, where is my confidence that it's actually going to cover my needs?
Well, you know, we've seen an evolution toward higher and higher deductibles, which is essentially addressing the very issue that Brian is raising, and people have been sort of having more quote-unquote skin in the game. The evidence is pretty mixed about what kind of behavior that's driving. People are less and less insulated, actually, from the cost of their medical care. But I'm not sure that's driving the kinds of savings so far that we'd like to see.
Limor, where do you imagine this, if we could sit all down here five, six years from now, do you think we're still going to be on the Obamacare track with all kinds of changes under our belt, or it's in the rearview mirror, and then what?
I think what we'll be doing is considering how we can continue to reform the way healthcare is delivered in this country. Right now, we're talking about an insurance market problem. It's a big problem. I think that we will fix that problem. But the question of how we can reorganize all of the different cogs that are delivering healthcare so that they are marching in the same direction, pushing us in the same direction at an affordable level, that's what we'll be discussing.
And how to marshal all that complexity into a political conversation that this country can absorb, digest, and act on in an effective way. Big challenge right there. Very grateful to the three of you for being with us this hour to look at it. Limor Daphne from Harvard Business School. Thanks so much, Limor.
Delighted to be here.
Brian Blaze at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you, Tom. Anytime.
And Noam Levy, health policy reporter for the Los Angeles Times, joining us today from Denver, Colorado. Noam, in the Mile High City, thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, good luck with your coverage. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.